Pardon me, everyone. This is the operator. Just need to inform you that today's conference is being recorded. If you do have any objections, you may disconnect your line at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you, Laurie. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the IRTP Part D Working Group call on Monday, 21st of October, 2013. On the call today, we have James Bladel, Mike O'Connor, Chris Chaplow, Holly Raich, Barbara Knight, Kristen Durain, and Angie Graves. We have apologies from Kevin Erdman and Avery Doria. And from staff, we have Lars Hoffman and myself, Shadesh Alvaden. May I please remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you, and over to you.
Now, the big question is, which you is it over to? James, do you want to run it today, or do you want me to do it?
Well, yeah, why don't I kick us off here until we get to, and then have you walk through the draft. But the first step, I guess, is just to give everyone an opportunity to jump in and amend their SOIs. Any takers? None, for the record. And then, for the record, anyone have any comments on the agenda, which was, thank you, Lars. I know we were kind of up against the wire on that one. And none of those. So, but Mikey, do you want to walk us through the draft that was circulated from the drafting team?
Yeah, let me do that. Oops, not that one.
No. This is a new...
Sorry, I clicked the wrong button, so we're going to get a lot of crud. I'm going to stop sharing for a minute.
That looks like a pretty cool app, though.
This is my whole day. It's just been one spectacular flop after the next. So I apologize. Just a second. Let me get
no worries.
The right application running and the right document in it, and then we'll...
While you're doing that, is that H in the chat?
That's
is that Holly?
I don't know.
Mysterious Holly.
I'm not trying to hide, seriously.
just confirming that we didn't have an extra guest.
No.
I think we now have to click the agreement to the ICANN participation.
Yeah.
And I think there's something in there about participating anonymously. I don't think they allow that.
Yeah. That's tricky. Okay, I think I'm ready now to share my screen and not totally bewilder the rest of you. Wait a minute. One last small bewilderment there.
There you go.
All right. So here's what we got. So drafting team got together last Friday, and we've got some work to do on sort of the technical level. But we also decided that it's probably not worth doing a lot more of that work until we get a few basic issues confirmed. We think we know where we're going as a working group, but we decided it was probably a better idea to take these issues back to the group now, because for the most part, these are turning into policy issues rather than drafting issues. And so what we did is pushed the mind map into a new Word document and renumbered it. I see that Christine is on the call, and I'm glad that I'm able to brag that, as you can see, we now have a numbering system that meets with Christine's higher standards than were embodied in the last round of this document. It's much easier to understand now. And so anyway, what we thought we would do is push this back to the group and let the group start working on it, given that many of the charter questions, A, B, C, D, E, F, are sort of embedded in here. And so the first part of this I want to highlight, we haven't really finished yet. We've got some ideas in here, but what we really want to do is get your thoughts on some other things first. I'll scroll forward, and the first big change is that we've added this notion that a registrant can get access to this process. And these are all sort of hooked together. Oh, Holly, you're sort of singing along in harmony. You may want to mute. It's kind of distracting when...
I have.
Oh, well, you're still coming through loud and clear. Anyway, I think that's one that we'll put... I think I'm going to build sort of a list as we go. Firm that registrants have access to the TDRP. And I think that's an open question until we can figure out the who pays thing. I think everybody's fairly comfortable with it if we can work out the details. But the devil is in the details. So that's the first substantive change. The other two are pieces that were in the existing policy, but they've been pulled out and put in this standing section. And this is one of the mechanical things that we'll want to do, is check and make sure that we haven't inadvertently changed something. One of the implicit decisions that we made, and this is another one that we need to sort out some policy issues on first, is the notion of an appeal. James, your hand's up. Sorry, I've been looking over there. Go ahead.
Sorry, I just put it up because at the previous section, one of the things that we're going to have to account for, and maybe it makes sense to tack it in here, is that resulting from IRTPC is this concept of a change of registrant, even if the change of registrar does not occur. So I'm wondering if this is an appropriate place to include that scenario of a change of registrant and then... But I think that does take us down an entirely different flavor of rabbit hole, and we need to be mindful of that. But it seems like that's where it would go.
That's a good one. I knew there were. I think this is great. I think we're going to have a very productive day, because I think what this can do is kind of create our punch list of policy issues that we have yet to resolve. So that's a good one. Thanks, James. Everybody should be doing what James just did and sort of saying, now, wait a minute. Don't forget this other thing that we need to talk about. So that's a good one. Okay.
Well, just thinking that should belong in Section B as perhaps a fourth point. Just putting that out there. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, we'll put it in as a tentative. Standing for registrant. Claimants, cases of change. And this is probably time to give Christine and Barbara a heads up. We think about the flow of this policy, whether we're injecting something that's really interestingly different. I don't think we solved this today, but just start thinking about that, because the computer programmer in me says, there's enough different in there that we may have to go through the whole flow of the thing and make sure that we haven't left something out. That's part of the reason I'm so interested in that one. Okay. All right. So the appeal one, this is sort of a conditional branch. If we eliminate the registry layer from the policy, then this one would go away, because the only thing a registrar can appeal is a registry decision. They can't appeal decisions of the dispute resolution provider. And so this is, you know, I think I'll start putting notes in here. I think that's probably a good idea. This section. That's the note on that. The next one is a section. This is another one where the drafting team pulled a bunch of stuff from various places in the existing policy and highlighted it in a new section. So that's the first bit of news. But then the second and question for the group is, we left the language the same. We left it at 6 months. And that's an open question, yeah, from the policy standpoint, is whether we want to change that, leave it the same, so on and so forth. So we'll put that in as a note. We aren't done with that discussion. The drafting team didn't make any choices for that. And these two pieces of language are straight out of the old policy. They're in different places. But that's not new language. Same goes for this section, Section E. These are sprinkled liberally across the existing policy, and we've pulled them into one pile. And again, this is a section that may go away. So that's sort of, I think, the big news on that section. This is much easier to understand.
Mm.
Kudos to the drafting team. The next one is the options for registrars, followed by the options for registrants and registrant claimants. We separated these because registrars have a few more options than registrant types. I'm catching things here as I go. As those numbers are wrong now. And again, this is one where we've already highlighted the fact that this goes away if we eliminate that option. That's part of the reason why we needed to come back to you all, is because we didn't want to make these choices for you. We wanted choice first, then drafting. This is a new section. This is the options for registrants and registrant claimants. And this is also where we've got an open question about the hoops that we need to take them through, which we just started to describe last week but didn't finish. And so these options need to be worked on. And then this is old language, the fact that the dispute resolution panel is a full stop. Once you get through that process, you're done. You have to go to court if you want to go further. And that's out of the old policy. But I think it surprised people. And I like this new version because it sort of brings some of these things forward. Hey, Volker's on. Oh, and we can say bad things about him because he can't say anything back. Don't forget to send the thick who is thing in, Volker. We'll all whine at you if you don't. It's Dubai.
I think I already did, and you're in CC.
Hey, you're in. Oh, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. Oh, look at that. Sorry, folks, but the thick who is working group came to full consensus. Last week, and we forwarded the motion and the report to the council in time for the next council meeting, and all thanks to Volker for doing that. But we couldn't find him this morning because we're pretty sure Volker was celebrating pretty hard the 15th anniversary of Key Systems. We were worried that you were passed out under a table somewhere.
Well, thanks for name dropping, but I just had the regular after weekend queue of emails that I was working through. That was all.
Okay. Well, thanks for sending that along. That's great. Okay. Remedies is another piece that we have not changed, but we've pulled from several parts of the existing policy into one pile. And basically says, okay, well, there are only a couple of things that can happen. Either the transfer is approved or it's reversed. And again, this last bit, disappears if we eliminate the registry layer. And then this is sort of odd language we may want to revisit. The reason that this is in here is because a registry can issue a decision of a finding of no decision. That's up here. And this also disappears, I think, if... I'm just going to put a kind of drafting question mark here because, you know, this is sort of responding to the previous clause, and we need some legal minds. I've got a note from Christine. Let's put that in there. So that is that a separate? I'll put it in as a separate section, Christine, and then we can fix it later. Thanks for catching that. Okay. Good catch. This is the kind of stuff the drafting team is going through all the time. So it's like when you see me doing something that you want to fix, just chime in. Don't be shy. Then we have the two sections that talk about the two outcomes, the reversing and the approving. I think both of these probably need something to do with the change of registrant. This is the part of the policy that know, isn't quite right, because this is aimed at an inter-registrar transfer, and we're going to need to include something when it's that clarifies what happens when it's a change of registrar. And here's our no decision. This is language out of the existing policy. This is essentially saying that this gives the various dispute resolvers, the registries and dispute resolution providers, an option to go back and ask for more information if they need it. This can't be an endpoint. It can only be an intermediate step. And then this is the one that if we eliminate the registries, then this whole section would go away, because there is no option for a dispute resolution provider to do no decision. They have to decide. Okay. Then we've got another heavily revised, but our main goal was to preserve most of what's already in the policy, especially in the case of the first level disputes, again with our little caveat that this may all go away. I think this is straight out of the existing policy. And then this is where we would be doing the dispute resolution provider, and I believe that this is also unchanged from existing policy, but we have this is one of the discussions that we still need to have. I think we've actually come quite a ways since this. So this is I'm actually going to amplify this. Because of the conversations that we've had since then. Christine, oh, I see your note. Let's see. It's there as 4, but needs to be included in 1. Let me just roll back.
Yeah, Mikey, it's possible it's there. I just maybe misread it. I think it's included in the number 1 as just approve.
We have approve.
Yeah, I think it's there.
Oh, so maybe we're okay? Can I take this out then?
Yeah, sorry. I didn't correct myself because I thought you were moving on and I didn't feel the need to go back. Sorry.
No worries. That's fine. Okay. I'd rather be overcorrected than undercorrected, so that's not a problem. I think the general provisions, which is where we're at now, is pretty much... Oh, this is the fees. We've already been through that. Court proceedings is straight out of the current... This is straight out of current... But everybody should read these carefully just to make sure they still make sense. And then this is one that doesn't exist today in the current policy. And we need language there. surprising, interesting that it doesn't exist in the policy today, but it doesn't. And you know, we may want to mirror the UDRP or something, but.
Mikey, it's James with a question.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I hit the mute button before I raised my hand there. I hit it up. When we say it's not there, whose liability are we limiting or seeking to limit?
I think we're seeking to limit ICANN's liability. I think that's the whole point of these processes.
We might want.
Yeah, this is Christine. This is Christine. It's three. It's ICANN. Sorry.
Go ahead, Christine.
Yeah. Go ahead. I would be interested in hearing what.
Yeah, the UDRP and the other policies have a standards language that says that in participating in the TDRP, in the, except for intentional negligence, intentional wrongdoing, the parties may not sue ICANN, the provider, or the panelist. And basically it's because we're just there sort of off to the aside, you know, just like adjudicating the dispute, et cetera. But unless we actually do something wrong, ICANN or the provider or the panelist, then we can't just be brought into every single lawsuit between the parties. Otherwise, what happens is the parties try to bring us in when they want to sue between each other. So it stops that, and it's not in there.
So thank you, Christine. And I don't want to put words in Barbara's mouth, but as a registrar, I think we would certainly like to avoid a similar situation where two of our customers are in dispute, and we are, and I think we see this today, where we're frequently named as co-parties or co-defendants to domain name disputes between two third parties. So I think, you know, mirroring the UDRP, existing UDRP language is good, but I think we should also take a look at whether or not that needs to apply to registries and registrars as well.
Yeah, if I can just respond, this is Christine from NAF. I want to be clear, that does actually absolve the registry and the registrar as well, the UDRP's policy or limitation does. The difference is that I think for here, because at least one level of this policy is between registrars who may actually sue each other, we have to really be thinking about how we would draft that language so that when the registrars are in dispute, assuming they're going to sue each other, well, that they can do that because they're the parties. And then the registry would be immunized. You want to, and then if we do allow registrants to bring these disputes, then I think you're right. I think to the extent that we need to limit liability of the registrars, I agree that that's probably something to discuss as well. I think it would be kind of tricky to write that, though. So we just have to think about how we would want to say that.
So, sorry to jump the queue. This is James again. As part of our work to set up these kind of registrars working together, we do have kind of a mutual indemnification language that, let me see if I can dig something up. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, that'd be great. If we've got models that are successfully being used elsewhere, by all means. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if, I guess, Mikey, my concern is I don't know if they're direct, you know, drop-in applicable to this situation, and they may be jurisdiction-specific, and maybe we don't even want to share it. I don't know. I'll have to look into that.
Okay. Well, it's good. You know, I'm glad that we stopped on this one, because clearly this is one we're going to need to work on a bit. Christine, go ahead.
Yeah, just in the interest of quick throwing out solutions, just to be clear, there's a little pit on limitation of liability in the UDRP policy, but the actual language that the complainant has to agree to is in the rules. So one way to solve the problem, I guess, just as far as, you know, who says what about when, is when we break down the rules and we say, if you're a registrar, you know, here's the set of complaint rules that you need to comply with, and here's the limitation of liability language you need to include. if you're a registrant, here's a limitation on liability language you need to include. And I think actually that ends up being a pretty simple way of solving the problem. So maybe it's not such a big deal after all to say, you know, we can pretty clearly bifurcate, you know, who the complainant is and make the limitation of liability rules based on who that party is. And then, like you said, then maybe something like James suggested is already in existence between two registrars. So in the event that there's two registrars that are, you know, duking it out through the TDRP and they decide to sue each other, there may be some, you know, information or some, you know, some basis or form language surrounding that. So I just thought I'd throw that out there as an option while we're thinking about it.
Thanks, Ed. I agree, and I'll wait to see any language on that. I think my concern is not so much the scenario you described, Christine, but more where someone is suing their hijacker and includes the registrar that failed to stop the hijacking, I guess. Failed to detect the hijacking.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yep, good stuff. And, you know, I like the possible path through this that Christine put us on, which is, you know, make the rules based on who the parties are. So, good. I just realized I'm not tracking changes, so I will do a version comparison and highlight these changes as I send out the next version of this. Okay, so here we are now done with the policy part. That's another big difference between this draft and the existing policy is that, and I can claim no credit. This is all because Christine is really smart about this stuff, but I completely endorse this notion of simplifying and clarifying this policy by separating it into more easily understood chunks. So the policy front end is probably where we are going to spend most of our time. But we also pulled, and I think we, the working group, are going to have to make sure that the rules align with the new policy as we go. But this is now kind of one level of detail down. And so there's a whole definitions part that doesn't have anything right now. That's to be drafted. I'll just put a marker in there. Christine, did we really do this on purpose? Do we really have a separate definition section for rules as opposed to policy? Or should we just have one definitions section for the whole?
It's in there as a placeholder, I think. The UDRP doesn't have any definitions in the policy and puts them all in the rules. But because there's some sort of defined parties and defined terms there, I think it's necessary to have definitions in the policy. So we left it there just in case there are things that show up later that need to be that are unique to the rules that need to be defined, we may just take that out.
Okie doke. Okay. So now the stuff that's there on the page is about what gets submitted in the form of a complaint, and for the most part, this is stuff that's in the existing policy. We just rearranged it again. Oh, and Christine makes a good point that it's way easier to do rules once we have policy. So I'm going to take you through the rules today, but I think I'm going to endorse Christine's point that we should really get the policy nailed down first and then come back through these rules and make sure that they align. But you can see this is where it gets pretty detailed. You know, it gets all the way down to the kind of language. And this is the sort of thing that Christine was referring to a minute ago, where we may be able to just write a paragraph like this for each of the parties when it comes to limitation of liability as well, and insert it into the rules so that people know right off the bat what they're getting into. You know, I think this is a really good approach. So, you know, it goes on and on. I'm really going to skim through this in a hurry because, as you can tell, it gets very detailed. And we'll want to do sort of a continuity check once we've got the policy stuff done. You know, we have, you know, this again is all still straight from the existing policy. We may, you know, we may want to touch some of these timing things or not. We just, we'll probably want to go through all of this again. And, you know, it talks about the kind of evidence and one of the things that we are doing that I do want to highlight is that we have two new terms. We've gone from gaining and registrar of record to respondent and complainant. And the reason we're doing that is because we now have more than just registrars filling those roles. So we want to define, okay, you're the complainant, and you might be a registrar or you might be a registrant, and here are the rules that you follow. So this is another vast simplification, because otherwise what happened in the existing policy is that all of this stuff kept getting repeated with tiny little changes in the language, and it was overwhelming to try and figure out what was going on. So this is another pretty big change, but at least in my editorial view, a huge simplification that makes things easier for people to understand. Oh, yeah, cocktail party. Yeah. You know, we could have the joint IRTP Thick Who Is cocktail party at some point. And by the end of it, people would all be sound asleep. Let's see, we've got handling default, we've got appointing a panel, I'm just zooming now, and then there's the issuing a decision. One of the things that's in here that I want to highlight, most of these, again, are out of the existing policy, but we did have a discussion about public posting by the dispute resolution provider, and so that's the placeholder for that, so that we draft some language that addresses that. Christine, go ahead.
Hey, Mikey, thanks. This is Christine. I just want to point out, as long as you're in here, scroll down to Romanet 5, 6, and 7. Those should be level I called appeals, or those should be removed, or those should go someplace else. Those are not part of issuing a decision. Somehow we managed to miss those.
Let's put a...
Those may just go away actually completely, I think, come to think of it. Because those have to go with if the registrars went to the registry and it didn't work out, and we already, I think, have that taken care of, I think. Or in any case, we need to find out if we're even going to have that as an option. So I would just, yeah, perfect, thanks.
Okay. I think that's it, because then there's a last section that's available to the, let's put a word in there, there's a supplementary rules section that is developed by the providers, and this is just a placeholder to let them know that this is where their rules could go if they want to do that. All right, so that's sort of the walkthrough of the Word document. Christine, I'll bet that's an old hand. If it's not, you get to go first. It wasn't.
Yes, no, I'm sorry. It's a vestigial hand.
Okay. Excuse me. James, go ahead while I cough myself to death here.
Hi, Mikey. Just one note here about this Section 3 for the supplemental rules. Oh, I'm sorry, supplementary rules. Okay. Maybe I've been saying it wrong all this time.
Oh, I may have just typed it wrong.
Well, either way, I think that we might want to include in this section a framework by which providers, if it's not already there, a framework for providers to disclose and what circumstances, you know, we would process amendments or changes to supplemental rules. I know that this is probably a non-factor with the existing TDRP because the volume is so low, but I think it could become an issue if we scale up this process by a couple of orders of magnitude, and might also be something that could be borrowed by future amendments to the UDRP.
What was the other thing besides amending? You said amending.
Posting or disclosing.
Supplemental. Yes, it's supplemental. Okay, I got that from Christine in the chat. Christine, you okay with disclosing? That kind of language going in there? Christine, go ahead.
I just want to point out, I don't know that James meant to model it on the UDRP, because the way the UDRP supplemental rules work is the providers amend them as they need to. They send a copy to ICANN Legal. We give ICANN Legal, I don't know how much time WIPO gives ICANN. We tend to give ICANN about 30 days notice, and then we, I don't know if, how much time I post on our website. At some point I put notice up on our website, and then we, you know, kind of segue in. Now, most of the time the things we've changed have been kind of not very big. I mean, we'll change the fees, you know, periodically because, you know, cost of doing business, et cetera, changes. We would change, you know, the type of files we support. You know, do we take certain file types? Those are the bulk of the rule changes, and then we tend to fix mistakes or clarifications, that sort of thing. I think it sounds to me like James is suggesting that we actually codify a process for providers that would not be modeled on the UDRP, but might be a model for the UDRP. It sounds like maybe James is. Maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but it sounds like you might not like the way it happens under UDRP now.
Well, and Mikey, should I respond? I'll raise my hand.
Yeah,
I think that it's more a question of, it seems like it's a bit of a, free-for-all now, and it is something I think that is missing from the UDRP. So anything that we would develop here could perhaps be borrowed by that.
Ah, okay. So I stuck that up in at least rules rather than in supplemental rules, and maybe you ought to go up in the
policy. I think actually it belongs in policy. Yeah, Mikey, that probably goes up in policy.
Yeah, all right. So let me take it out of there. Pardon me while I scroll. I apologize. Oops. Here we go. Fees. Is that right? Yeah. I don't like this numbering system. I think we need all of the numbers on the rows. But I don't know how to make Word do that. Can Word do that, Christine? Where you get HI1 so you can tell which, you know, all the way down? Must be able to do that. All right, so I'm going to put it in.
Yeah, you mean like line up on the same tab? They should.
Yeah, that's what I want. Here we go. we'll put it in. Excuse me, I'm sorry about this. Put it in there for now. And then figure out where it should really go. That was a good catch by all.
Hey,
I'm very silent. Is it really that bad? Mikey silent? That sounds like an affront against nature.
No, you sound perfectly. I think Christine is a bit loud, but I wasn't sure if my settings were not adjusted.
I've noticed that Christine's mic is a little loud on her computer. I often hover over the volume button on that. Okay.
Sorry, folks, is this better?
Just a little bit more silent.
Yeah, it's getting better, though.
Yeah, much better.
Okay, how's that?
Ooh, yeah.
Any better?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good. Okay, it's 10 till the hour. James, as my co-pilot, what do you think? Do you want to stop here? Do you want to dive into something?
I think we're good here. I think we could probably spend a bit of time talking about the item number 3 on the agenda if we're finished with our walkthrough, just because as we noted on our last week's call, and I think other working groups are dealing with this as well, is that Europeans change time this weekend, or did they already change time?
This is last, this coming weekend on Sunday.
Yeah, and then the weekend following is the change for North America. So, I think that based on the composition of our group. Well, first of all, I'm sorry, Holly. You're definitely the odd man out as far as time.
Really?
it's not mindful of or not being dismissive of that, just an observation. But it seems like we are sort of based on the usual participants. We are mostly a North American contingent, particularly when you account for the staff folks. So my recommendation, and I think that this is something we discussed last week, would be that we continue at this time one more week, which causes a one-hour disruption for our friends in Europe, and then adjust the time to back to, I believe it's 1500 UTC, 1600 UTC, because UTC does not change, for next week and then through the duration of the working group. So that would be my proposal. I don't know if anyone feels very strongly against that. I see Chris Chaplow is agreeing, and I would assume that, Chris, you are in Europe as well, right?
Correct, in Europe, yeah.
So I appreciate that, and certainly not unaware of the sacrifice or the disruption that has the potential to cause, but asking our friends on the eastern coast of the Atlantic to, take one for the team for next week. And I see green check marks. Barbara, I don't think the Americans get a vote on this one. I'm just saying. But thank you for the support.
Well, and this is, I think that really what we ought to do is we ought to just decide what the GNSO is going to do, and then all of the meetings follow that pattern rather than having...
I agree, Mikey.
Because it'll be massively confusing if we've done anything else.
Well, and this is not the only working group that's asking these questions, and so it sure seems like there's a, if not a standard practice, at least some sort of cultural component that needs to kick in here and say, this is how we handle this, and... because I think that, we may be on the opposite end of the equation when we come out or go on to summertime, later next year in middle 2014, and it may be the folks on the western time zones that have to bite the bullet then. So if there's no objections, then that's my recommendation, and I would hope that Lars and Julia can square that away for next week's meeting, and then we can all be synchronized again the week following. Don't see any objections. So, okay. Okay, and that was all I had, Mike.
Okie dokie. Well, I think then we'll call it a day today and see everybody in a week. And with that, on the slightly discombobulated time, and then we'll settle back in after that. That's it for me, too. Thanks, King.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.